For a lot of the time that I was in the rehab hospital, I wanted to die. I didn't, there was no purpose for me anymore. And I think as human being, we all need a purpose. We all need a reason
Yeah.
for why we're here and what we're doing. And I didn't have that anymore.
Welcome to Unexpected Turns with myself, Anne Dibben, and Beverly Evans. Today we meet Sam, an adrenaline junkie, a mad keen skier and mountaineer, until one day she had a fall, slid 50 meters down a slope, and ended up in a coma. Did she recover? How did she do it? And what's she doing now? Here's Sam's story.
Good evening, Sam.
Hello.
Hi, Sam. Good evening to you too.
Hello.
Sam, it's really kind of you to come on here because you've done some pretty extraordinary things.
Nice to be here.
Where are you, Sam? Where are we speaking to you?
Bournemouth. I'm from Bournemouth.
Just down the road from me. I only live about half an hour. I'm from Southampton,
Really?
but Beverly is in the lovely Brecon Beacons.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I love the Brecon Beacons.
Yeah, I bet. Lots of mountains for you to climb here, Sam. Have you done any climbing in the Beacons?
Yes, I have. I've done the Cat's Back. Is it called the Cat's Back between Herefordshire and Wales?
Dragon's Back, yeah. What about Penavan?
Yeah, Pennyfan, Black Mountains. I've done Sugarloaf.
Well, I'm literally sort of at the foot of the Sugarloaf, Sam. I can look out of my window at the Sugarloaf.
Oh,
Oh
brilliant.
yeah.
Oh gosh, so you've done quite a bit of climbing then in South Wales, yeah.
Sam, I love the way you described yourself. You described yourself as an adrenaline junkie.
I think because I don't think it's really adrenaline. I just think I love doing anything that you think you can't do, but you actually can. I just think we all put restrictions on ourselves so much so. And I just think we've only got one life. Do whatever you can.
Exactly. And you've had quite an interesting story. Would you want to take us back a bit to your not so recent past? Because you had quite an unexpected turn, shall we say, in 2016.
So I was living in London as a physio. I loving my job, but then one day I was on the train on the way to work, and I was just looking at what else I could do, and I saw a job in Austria as a snow sports physio. And as soon as I saw it, I knew it was going to be mine. I manifested getting the job.
Yeah.
While I wasn't working, I was going skiing, and then I would have clients phoning me up to give them the sports massages, have their injuries. And then New Year's Eve 2016, I hiked up a mountain and decided to sled back down with a group of people about 2:30 in the morning. I sled the wrong way and I fell 50 meters, and I broke my neck, my lower back. Massive injury.
Horrendous injuries.
I was in a coma, and only 7% chance of the coma. And so my sister and my dad were saying goodbye to me because they didn't think that I was in a coma.
Oh gosh, a horrendous accident.
They didn't think you would survive, basically.
No, there was 7% chance I was going to come out of the coma, and if I came out, there was a high probability that I was going to vegetated.
Cool.
So how long were you in this coma for, Sam?
2 weeks.
All your family had to come over and see you because your father lived in Australia, isn't that right?
Yeah, so this is the weirdest thing. So I hadn't seen my dad since I was 18, and except for the time that I phoned him and told them that mum had passed away. But someone had to phoned him and told him that I'd had my accident, and he flew from Australia to Austria. And I remember when I came out of the coma, I think I was being wheeled back from a scan to the ward, and I could see my dad. And I turned around to my nurse and I said, "Am I still dreaming? See my dad? I haven't seen him in 10 years."
Gosh.
And that was just such a surreal to happen. But yeah, strange.
So you were a bit of a miracle coming out of this coma with less than 7%.
Yeah.
That's quite, no wonder you've got a new zest for life, the fact that you've survived that. I read somewhere else you said that, you know, unless you've experienced extreme pain, you don't get to appreciate what life is.
Yeah, I think there's been lots of research that's been done. It's called post-traumatic growth. And so apparently you go through something traumatic and you develop so much more as a person because you realise that you've only got one life. And if you want to do something, you just got to do it.
Yeah. And that's what you set about doing. So when you came out of the coma, your prognosis still wasn't good, was it?
No. So they thought I wasn't going to remember anything. I wasn't going to be able to speak, wasn't going to remember my sister, my dad. I couldn't, had to learn to walk, talk, eat, everything again. I couldn't use my right arm because of the nerve damage I had. And they weren't sure how damaged it was. It was all a bit of a strange scenario because I was having lots of medical students as well coming up to me, interviewing me because they was I could even talk, let alone have a conversation with people.
So you were an anomaly, if you like, but in the right direction.
Yeah.
So what do you think, you know, has kept you? I mean, you can't remember anything. You said you had dreams.
Yeah, so because you're so medicated, dream world is really mixing with reality. I wasn't able to differentiate the two. I dreamt that I was in the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air's pool house.
Oh, wow.
And the butler was helping me in the hospital in a limo. And I dreamt that my patients on the other side of the room were my physio patients, and I was trying to get fancy dress clothes for them.
Right.
It was really strange.
You've got no consciousness of what it was that kept you going at that time and actually made you pull through this?
I do. So my sister, when I was in the coma, she put some headphones in my ears and it was my mum's song. And I started to react to the music that was going on. And then I pulled out the intubation tube myself. So I decided I was going to be out of the coma.
Wow.
That was it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's the start of a really long road then to recovery for you, Sam, and being on the other side, you know, as a physiotherapist. How was that? Were you a good patient?
No. No. I'm a stubborn, independent female physio. That is the worst type of patient. But I think even though it was probably not great for my therapists and my doctors, it kind of prompted me, it made me write more about what was happening, about asking questions about what medication I was on and how long I was going to be on it for and what was happening, like trying to play more of a part in my health, my recovery, because I think that's an important thing that people can do, is having that it's your role, it's your responsibility to look after yourself. There's no one else's job.
No.
And it's to have some control as well, isn't it?
Yeah, massively.
And knowledge, isn't it? You know, just have that knowledge of what's happened and what's going on. Was that harder because you were in a different country?
Yeah.
You know, all your reports and everything being in a different language, yeah. I suppose. And...
Yeah, everything was in German. And luckily, a lot of the nurses, they were good doing English at school. They wanted to put their English on me, so they were quite good at speaking. But you feel like a prisoner. You feel like you are stuck in somewhere and you can't get out. If like meals are a certain time of day, medications given a certain time of day, you're allowed to see people at visiting hours. It's like you're a prisoner. Yeah. And There's no other way to put it. And now, me being a therapist, now doing a master's to be an advanced practitioner, I know what it's like to be that, feel like that, to feel like that prisoner, to feel like you can't get through something. And because you have less option because of an institution that you're stuck in.
Yeah. Did they give you a kind of a discharge date? Did they give you any?
No.
Oh,
I was in Innsbruck Hospital while I was coming out of coma, and then I went to a normal ward. And luckily, the Austrian embassy saw my accident on the news, and then they referred me to a neurological rehab hospital where I had my rehab. And I remember being in there, and like, their healthcare system is amazing. But I was in a room with another lady that was a lot worse off than me. And I was like, why am I here? Like, I can start walking by myself. I get like, there was no reason for me to be here. And I went to the doctor's office and I said, what was my discharge plan? When can I go? And they were like, well, normally people stay a while. And, you know, and I said, I'm not normal people. I want to go. So I discharged my.
Oh, right.
And I went, yeah.
And did you discharge yourself and you went straight back to the UK?
No, I went straight back to the the flat that I was living in St. Anton. And then being in that flat, then you realise how broken you are as a person. Wow. And how much you live as a human being. You were in a really clinical environment with like nothing on the floor, like the floors are clean and there's no sticks or like there's nothing, the beds are made all the time, there's
no.
And you, when you're trying to like have a shower by yourself and trying to cook yourself something to eat and make coffee, and you can't, you realize how much you can't, how disabled you are and how much you're going to need help. And that was the hardest thing for me.
Yeah,
I'm sure it was.
I can imagine for somebody as strong as yourself, that would be really, really hard. I can see you're getting emotional about it now, but how did you get through that?
There were times. Sorry.
No. I understand.
Who supported you, Sam? Who was around you?
The owner of the company I was working for was really supportive, but he was the only one that was there. Luckily, I had him looking after me and taking over the business. But I think going back to what Anne said, I think for a lot of the time that I was in the rehab hospital, I wanted to die. There was no purpose for me anymore. And I think as a human being, we all need a purpose. We all need a reason.
Yeah.
Why we're here and what we're doing. And I didn't have that anymore. So I didn't want to be around anymore. And I was in so much pain with my arm.
Yeah.
But then I remember looking out the window. I remember looking out the window and it was just so beautiful.
Sam, I wish I was there to give you a hug, Sam. Sorry that we're talking over Zoom.
Could you see the mountains, Sam?
I saw the mountains and I looked out the window and it was so beautiful, snow-covered mountains.
Yeah.
I thought to myself, I don't want to feel like this anymore. This is not me. And I started making goals. They're just small goals, but then once you achieve those small goals, like a snowball effect, they get bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
And then I started blogging, I started writing and then reading it back. And then that was helping me getting my thoughts and feelings out. And I published that blog and then I was starting to get feedback from different people saying I'd been helping them as well. And that made me
amazing. Feel like a
purpose then. And then I carried on.
If you needed that purpose and that goal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is those very, very small steps, isn't it? What were the small steps that you set yourself, Sam? Some of the early ones, if you could give an example.
Well, one was walking upstairs.
Quite a big goal when you've gone through what you've gone.
Yeah, because I remember one time I wanted to look in my cupboard and I wasn't allowed to walk by myself yet. And I didn't know what I was looking for. I wanted to get up and look in my cupboard. So I did, and I fell over. And it took me so long to get up off the floor. And then I realised that I need to walk with other people first. Walk before you run. So then it was things like wanting to shave my legs with my left hand, but I was cutting myself by accident and thought I was so... They took my razor away from me. It was like certain little things like learning to clean my teeth with my left hand because I'm right hand dominant.
Yeah.
And putting them with my left hand and like washing my hair with like those little things that now I take for granted because it just become automatic to me.
Yeah.
It was so hard. Mm-hmm. The little things like doing up a bra, wiping yourself when you go to the toilet with your left hand, with your non-dominant hand. These things are so abnormal, but they just were my now new life that I had to get used to.
And that's another phrase that I know you've used, the new normal, changing the norm, I think was how you phrased it.
I knew probably about 7-8 months of my injury, I kind of realised that I had to grieve the person that fell off the mountain because I wasn't that person anymore.
No.
That Sam unfortunately died. And I was having to learn to be someone else, learning to be a new Sam.
Yeah. And you've got all the physical struggles and then also all the mental struggles, which, you know, is huge, isn't it? You know, it's a complete process.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as you say, a completely new way of life for you.
Yeah.
Did you always love the mountains, Sam? Or?
I always loved skiing. I always loved being adventurous, but I was never the kind of person that would go on an 8-hour hike and think that was fun. But I think what happened was, you cannot write this, 2 days my injury, I met a guy called Martin Hewitt and his wife, Victoria. They were on holiday in Australia. And they had phoned my company to give them a sports massage because they'd had a hard day on the slopes.
Right.
And he was telling me about the company he had set up for veterans disabled because of the war, how he wanted to prove to them that just because something traumatic had happened, they can still achieve the most amazing things. So I exchanged contact details with him because I wanted to be their physio. Anyway, 2 days later, I had my injury. So I got back to England and I emailed him saying, I'm really sorry, I can't be your physio anymore because this has happened. But I really want to be involved. And then 6 months after my injury, 3 weeks after my nerve transplant surgery, I tried to hike with him in the Brecon Beacons.
Oh.
And I could only walk the UK. And then I had to be taken back to the accommodation. Then that was it. Then that was my next goal. To climb mountains and to get strong enough and to get enough to do anything I could in the world.
Oh, Sam, that was meant to be, that meeting. That's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. Things happen for a reason. And I know, I believe that. I believed that before because of things that happened because of my mum's death. But you cannot predict that I was going to meet him to the injury.
No. That is just the perfect person to meet, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really, you know? All those things that you must have had in common, you know? Obviously, all the trauma that he suffered and you. And then that you know, that drive and that passion. And
yeah, well, the military people in the military, they've got such a drive, such a get-up-and-go attitude, such a there's always an excuse, there's always a reason, there's always a way that you can get through something. So don't complain, just get on and do it.
Yeah,
that mine's the best thing that I'd taken from that company, and I still climb with them 7 years on, and that's who I'm doing Denali with.
Incredible.
Yeah, and that's who you did base camp with as well, isn't it? Everest base camp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
You've come so far, Sam, physically. You're talking about the things that are now the norm for you. But you did say about mentally, it broke you and you're a new person. Mentally, is having all that physical improvement helped? Or have you done other things and had other things to help you with how it's affected you?
I think I really force myself when I'm training. I really push myself so far, because I think me being doing that, I think, shows my strength mentally as well as physically. And now doing my master's and doing all these things that all those doctors never thought I was going to be able to do, like, you know, learning to do a master's, speak even, like, I'm just, and I think that drive and that passion for life has all come from those small goals that I've achieved. I mean, climbing the highest mountain in Italy only 20 months after my injury was the start of something that can never be taken from me.
No.
And it, you know, it must give you sort of tremendous sort of hope, and you must feel really positive about the impact that you have on other people's lives. You know, you must get amazing feedback from people. You must help a lot of people with your story.
Yeah. Well, I hope I do. I think sometimes it's difficult to feel a certain way about yourself because you don't want to come across as egotistical. But I've had people say to me that I've been an inspiration, and I've made them even get up in the morning and go see sunrise because I do, and I made them want to take their being. And I just think people need to realise we've got such a small time on this earth. If we don't do things that we enjoy and we love, then when are we ever going to do it?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
That's such a good note to live your life around. And as you said, the trauma that you've been through gives you that growth mindset. And I do know from Bev and I talking to other people, and you've talked a lot about it, it is that mindset that gets you through it and makes the physical achievements possible.
Yeah. I mean, as well as doing things myself and writing, I read a lot. I read a lot of self-development books, and I find a lot of strength in them because it makes you realise that how you're feeling is not, it's not just you. Everybody. Yeah. Everybody has the same thoughts. Yeah. Everybody feels the same way. It's how you manage it that is the difference.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And as you say, it's a journey, isn't it? You know, because obviously it can be very raw and very emotional, you know. It's not linear, is it? You know, you go forward, you go backwards, and then you get completely knocked off your feet sometimes, I'm sure, you know. And
yeah,
you know, it's very much, you know, a journey. But it's so important to have that mindset, as you say.
Yeah. I mean, there's always going to be things that go wrong or things that you don't imagine happening. But things always happen for a reason. And like recently, again, my second flat that I'm in, my landlady turns around to me and says she has to sell it, so I've got to find something else. But I know these happen for a reason, and whatever happens next will be where I'm meant to be. You know, it might not be great, it might not be nice to me right now, but something better will come out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's only temporary, and you will move on and achieve. I mean, you have achieved great things. And as Bev says, you know, and as you've heard, huge inspiration to other people.
Yeah.
Going back to what you were saying, as you were saying, it's not always easy. There are ups and downs to it, but you've done amazingly well.
Yes, Sam, you know, you talked a lot about all the obstacles, you know, the mental and physical obstacles you've had to overcome. So what advice would you give to other people who are maybe going through something similar?
Start off setting goals that are, it could like the smallest goal that you know you're going to achieve, that snowball effect, and then keep going, and then the goals get bigger. Also, don't be afraid. Like, think, be comfortable out of your comfort zone. Be comfortable with being uncomfortable. That's when things develop, and that's where things get better. Always, there's always a way forward. There's always a reason to try harder. There's always, you've only got, like, so many things are, sorry.
Yeah,
there are lots of things. Well, there are lots of things you've said already. The other thing you said was that writing it down and reading back you found helpful.
Yeah,
is that something that you would recommend everybody does? I know I now keep a diary, which I didn't used to do.
Yeah, definitely. Have you? I think like it's important that we get our thoughts out into the physical world, and then when we read them back, it makes us realize, really, do we actually feel that way, or it makes them more acceptable, and it makes them more real that we can get through them even if they're out in the open. As well as doing gratitude journals, like just even three things that you're grateful for, anything, it's important that we make that say them out loud, and we say them to ourselves. Is that we just take things for granted. I took walking for granted. I took eating for granted. I took tying my shoelaces for granted. It's until those things are taken away from you, then you should be grateful for them.
That's true.
That's it. And I felt I was very smug until something happened to me. You know, my life was good. Everything was very easy. And then something happens, and you're right, you do. I took everything for granted.
Yeah, you take your health for granted.
I think so. And I think when you've had that health safety net pulled away from you, you know, it's never the same, is it? You know, never the same again. And it does change the way you look at life. Yeah. Very much so. Speaking from personal experience, I can totally relate to that, and I'm sure lots of people can as well. Yeah.
You said you'd had some, you know, dark times, and it wasn't all good, but would you say you're content now, Sam?
I think human beings, we all have that negative inner monologue that we deal with constantly. Sometimes it's louder than other times. And especially females, it depends on whereabouts in the month you are. It depends on how loud those negative thoughts are. But if you start practicing on minimizing those thoughts, on doing things that are positive for you, doing things that make you feel better, and those thoughts become few and far between. You will. I'm not going to say you're never going to have them. But you learn how to deal with them better. You learn how to quiet them better as well.
Mm. You talked a lot about how your family were there right at the start, and then about how the group, Adaptive Grand Slam, I couldn't quite get the title right, Adaptive Grand Slam have helped. Have you got a very close-knit group of friends and family that, you know, you can turn to when times are rough?
I think me being stubbornly independent, I don't allow myself to talk to people. I try and figure out things myself, which is a detriment to me, actually. Like I should learn to accept help more, but I struggle with that. I always have. But I do have really close friends My dad, I don't speak too much. My mum passed away when I was 24. My sister has her own problems, but I have close friends. But I think I'm very much an extrovert introvert, depending on time of day, depending on the day, the week.
Yeah.
And I like, unfortunately, I love my own company, and I'm stubborn.
Nothing wrong with that, is there at all? Yeah. No.
We all get through it in different ways, don't we? And I know I probably rely on other people. Well, Beverly's my backup here, and
yeah,
you do. I do. So I'm always. Well, I always admire people who, like yourself, are fiercely independent and just strive forward and set their own goals and make it. I do need encouragement.
And I think that stubbornness and that resilience, which you've got in abundance, has helped your road to recovery so much.
And I know where that's come from, like, because my mum became unwell when I was 13 with cancer, and she went 13 years of being poorly all by herself. And seeing someone that strong go through something awful all by herself is just made me realise that when that happened to me, I can get through it. If my mum could go 13 years going through something so traumatic and awful by herself, then I could do this.
Yeah. Oh.
So you had that fighting spirit from a young age instilled in you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about the future, Sam? You know, on a positive note, what about your future aims and goals? What have you got planned?
Well, in a year and a half, I'll be completing my master's, so I'll be a qualified advanced clinical practitioner. And then I want to do my mountain medicine, so I then will go on expeditions as the medical personnel. Regarding anything else, I just want to keep myself fit and strong mentally and physically to be able to take anything that life throws at me or that throws me off.
Amazing.
But before my injury, I always had really like set 5-year goals. And I know that life can literally change in a split second without any warning. So I don't have those long set out goals anymore. I just try and live in the present moment. I think that's what we all should do. Live presently. Try not to think about the future or the past. What's happening right now?
Yeah, just enjoy where we are right now. You know, what we've got now is enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's all we have, isn't it? The now. So, yeah, it's absolutely right.
Yeah.
And it's hard. It's hard sometimes, isn't it? It's hard, as you say, to shut the worries out and shut the fears out. But it's the best way to think.
Yeah. Yeah, really. And like you said, it is hard. It's especially females. We always think so far into the future. Yeah. And I don't know where that's come from. I think that's probably been installed with us from really early in history. But I think, live in the present moment is the most important thing. You never know what's going to happen.
No. Enjoy it while you can. Yeah. Well, thank you, Sam. It's been fascinating hearing your stories, and we're just reading your blog as well as talking to you. It is very, very powerful, and lots of messages that we need to take on board. And I know you will be continuing to inspire people.
Hopefully.
No, hopefully about it. Definitely.
Yeah.
Is there anything that we should have asked that we perhaps haven't asked, Sam?
I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think, unfortunately, it's very difficult to put everything across in a way that for you to remember how you were was back then. Now everything is just so automatic, and this is how my life is now. To me, it doesn't seem to be anything special, anything different. I've always, to me, I've been this person for longer than 7 years now. So I don't think you have missed anything out.
Good.
Thank you. Well, you're wonderful. It's a wonderful to meet this Sam that you are now. We never knew the other Sam, but it's wonderful meeting you and seeing you as you are now. So
lovely.
Thank you very much. And I'm glad that you've gone on to achieve great things and will continue to do. And I look forward to perhaps reading in a couple of years' time in your 9-year goal when you've actually summited Everest.
Yes, yeah. Well, I'm writing a book. It's called Falling Upwards, and the chapter will be Summiting Everest.
Amazing. Oh, it's been lovely, perfect. Lovely to talk to you, Sam. And I wish you all the health, good health and happiness in the world.
Thank you. It was lovely meeting you.
And thank you for waiting for us.
Okay.
enjoy the rest of your evening.
That was Sam Baines. What an inspirational person. We really enjoyed listening to her story, and we know it was difficult for her. But you learn so much about yourself when you go through trauma. As Sam says, it's not all happiness and light. She does have dark days, but without that darkness, how do you experience joy? Looking forward to having you join us next time. As always, thank you to you, our listeners, and our guests. If you've got any questions or comments, please do get in touch. All the details are on our social media accounts at unexpectedturns.com. Thank you. Until next time. Bye.